And welcome to Small Town Mysteries, a show where three longtime friends from Massachusetts tell crazy and heartbreaking true stories filled with the extra flair of small town mystery. I'm Kate, here with Christine.
Hello.
And Rachel.
Hello.
Bringing you our next episode on Jan Cruz. But before we get into that, I'm going to highlight our missing person for this week. This week, I'm highlighting Elijah Vu from Two Rivers, Wisconsin. He was last seen on the 3900 block of Mishicot Road in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, at approximately 8 a.m. on February 20th, 2024. So this is a recent one. Elijah is 3 years old with brown eyes and dark blonde hair. He was last seen wearing gray pants, a long-sleeved dark collared shirt, and red and green dinosaur slip-on shoes. He might have a red and white plaid blanket with him. There is a $15,000 reward for information leading to the location and return of Elijah or the arrest and conviction of the individuals involved in his disappearance. If you have any information concerning Elijah's whereabouts, please contact the Two Rivers Police Department at 844-267-6648. Or you can contact the FBI Milwaukee field office. They are also handling this case. So Elijah's just a little dude. I'll have his pictures up on our Instagram account at Small Town Mysteries Pod. So if you live in the Wisconsin area, please check that out and keep your eyes peeled for him.
Thank you, Kate.
You're welcome. And now to Christine.
Today I'm going to be talking about the 2015 unsolved murder of Jeanette Pigman Cruz. This is a listener suggestion from Ariel. So thank you. We appreciate you so much. Thank you for listening and for the suggestion.
Thanks, Ariel.
Yeah.
You're the best.
So this murder occurred in the small town of Brewster, Minnesota. And this is legitimately small. Oh, that's so cool. Kate has a Brewster, Massachusetts sweatshirt on. Like a crew neck.
What are the odds?
Okay, well, wait, it's going to get even better. So the town is legitimately small. As of 2020, the population was 506. And the town or city, according to Wikipedia, is only 1.4 square miles. So very, very small. Tiny.
That's tiny. Barely a town. That's like a half a property.
Yep. Okay, and here it is. So fun fact, a brochure that was about the town stated that the present name of Brewster. So originally the town was called Hersey. It was given in honor of Brewster, a town in Barnstable County, Massachusetts, which was named in honor of Elder William Brewster, one of the first settlers of Plymouth Colony.
I wish you guys could see my face right now. That is awesome. What are the odds though? Because not only do I happen to be wearing this sweatshirt, but I bought this sweatshirt last summer on Etsy. Shout out Etsy, because I didn't want to go in person and pay an arm and a leg for a sweatshirt from this town that I like. And Etsy had a really cute one. And I wore it like twice. And then it got lost in my room, which was like a mess. And I just cleaned my room this week and found it and washed it and put it on today. So like that, I don't believe in coincidences. And I don't know what that's telling me, but it's telling me something.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was just funny. Because like my first thought when I heard of Brewster, Minnesota, I was like, oh, like the town in Massachusetts. And it actually had some connection to it, which is cool.
That's where my family vacations every year and has since I was a little baby. So I'm very, very familiar with Brewster.
And as you can imagine, because the town was so small and tight-knit, the residents were in absolute shock when they discovered that Jan had been murdered. That would be like, I mean, the town is basically the size of our graduating high school class. To put it into perspective. I mean, it's a little bigger, crazy. But
yeah, not by much, though.
We went to not a super small school, but like a relatively small school compared to some of the other big schools in our area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting metric to measure it by.
So obviously, though, we have to go back a little bit in time to talk about what happened prior to the murder. Jan and her husband, Chris, wanted to buy a place in Spider Lake, Minnesota. That's kind of where this all starts.
Immediately, no.
Yeah, nope. Just because of the name, I would refuse.
So respectfully, no.
I didn't really look into if there's actually spiders there, and that's why it was given the name. But the
no,
place
I feel like
itself,
the name, it has to come from somewhere, and no, it's not happening.
The place itself looks lovely. High ratings. it's kind of one of the like hidden gems of Minnesota, I guess. And it was pretty far from where they lived, about 6 hours drive. But they absolutely loved vacationing there. They would go there like on a yearly trip, and they wanted to purchase a home there. Like, they actually had plans to buy a good amount of the resort that was up there. Chris in particular had his heart set on owning a home there, owning property there. It was like his dream to do that. They did go on the 6-hour drive just to see if it was a possibility, kind of talk to people about owning property there. And that was in August of 2015. But with how expensive everything was, and with their daughter Bailey still being in school, and kind of, you know, Jan kind of wanted to wait until things had settled down a little bit more. With all of that, they just didn't really think they could make it work, especially the money part. It was just really expensive. So August 19th, 2015, a call to 911 is made from Chris. And he says in the call, somebody shot my wife. And the operator questions, you know, like, someone shot your wife? Who? And he replied with, I don't know. I was sleeping. I heard a bang, got up, and the back door was wide open. Chris checked on his 15-year-old Bailey, who was not harmed or hurt in any way.
That's good, at least.
Mm-hmm. The nature of Jan's injury was a shotgun slug that entered her shoulder and exited her back. The medical examiner thought she could have potentially stayed alive for 3 to 5 minutes following the shot. There were 2 shotgun shells found on the property. There was a round that was fired through a wall in the house, and nothing in the house was missing. Nothing moved out of place. There was really only a broken and open window in the house. But when they kind of looked into that, you know, they realized it had been raining and really muddy outside that night, but there were not even footprints or any marks that indicated someone entered the house.
That's very odd. Sus.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to paint the scene, we have what appears to be someone breaking into the house. That's kind of what we're made to believe. To only murder Jan Cruz, who was known by everyone in town to be this extremely kind-hearted individual who never had issues with anyone. Investigators interviewed Chris, the husband, because of course they did. He stated that they were essentially spooning at night. Like, he was kind of on back of her, she was in front of him. And the first thing he heard was a single loud bang. He really emphasized, like, this was only one bang, and he heard Jan sit up and say, oh my God. He then was thinking in his mind at the time, oh, this is so similar to the fire, which apparently happened a couple months prior, in which their garage had burned down.
Okay, so he thought it was connected to the fire?
Yeah. That's where his mind went.
Was the fire an arson?
Well, at the time, the insurance investigators said they believed that the fire could have been intentionally set.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That throws a little twist in there.
So after Chris heard the bang and saw his wife had been shot, he said that he laid her back down in bed and went to get a phone to call 911. But by the time he got back, Jan, he just knew she was gone. Investigators were confused by the fact that Chris said he laid her back down in bed, but his hands were mysteriously not covered in blood, even though there was a lot of blood at the scene.
That's...
I guess he could have washed his hands, but then...
But then why is that the first thing you think to do?
He didn't say that he did that. Like, even in the interviews, he was like, I don't know, they just weren't covered in blood.
Okay.
Only my forearm had a little bit of blood on it. However, Jan's parents never believed Chris had anything to do with her murder. So after the murder, they invited Chris and the daughter Bailey to move in with them and live there. They lived there for several months. The investigators then interviewed Bailey, and her story was a little different than Chris's. She recalled loudly and clearly hearing two big bangs. She didn't know if she should stay in her bed when she heard them or if she should get out of bed. So she first texted her mom two question marks, and then she texted her dad, who she saw coming down the stairs at around 2:30 a.m. She could hear her dad and mom yelling. She heard her dad yelling, "What the hell?" And then the rest was all kind of jumbled. Chris made the call at 2:39. And of her mom and dad's relationship, Bailey said that they got along all right. They had some disagreements, but nothing major. Like, overall, they seemed happy.
Seems pretty typical.
Bailey also said that she had been pretty stressed out about the potential move to Spider Lake. She didn't really want to move and upend her whole life 6 hours away, which I think is pretty relatable for anyone who is in high school. And so during this time, she had been talking with an older male friend by the name of Jeremy. Jeremy was 19 years old, and Bailey said that her parents didn't really know that he had come over to visit her before.
That that sounds like the kind of thing your parents wouldn't know about, mm-hmm. With that kind of age difference. I'm going to say it real loud. If you have an age difference like that, and it's a significant one, like I would say 15 and 19, that's notable, mm-hmm. for a few reasons. I do think 4 years in and of itself is not extraordinary as an age difference, but like that would be if you're in your 20s,
right?
When yeah, you're in your teens and one of you is a legal adult and one of you is not a legal adult, girl, he's dating you because girls his age won't.
Yeah, or because he's into younger girls.
Yeah, or because he has
a- well, it's because they know he's a creep. Please consider that. Go listen to Dear John by Taylor Swift and don't date older men when you're that young. Thank you. I just had to throw that out there.
And also listen to Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda.
Yes, listen to Would've, Could've, Should've after Dear John. Because they're, yeah, you have to, it's a story. It tells a story.
Yeah.
Rachel's laughing, but we're dead serious about this. It tells a story.
I know. That's what's so funny.
She described him as a friend, but said that he did come over one night to talk to Bailey's parents about them both liking each other and kind of asking for permission to date.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry. Absolutely not. I'm putting my parental foot down.
Yeah, and that's what they did. Like, Bailey's mom and dad did not want her to date him at all.
Wow. Responsible parenting. Love that.
I feel like the problem with that is, though, it's like one of the, it's like the forbidden fruit. So, like, you tell your child you can't date this man, and then she's just going to go out of her way more to see him.
That's, yeah. That's, I mean, it depends on the child.
Yeah, but around, I would assume so at that age. Like, I just feel like I would, that's
yeah,
the
yeah.
age.
You have a fair point.
I think at that age, like, you think you know better, and there's, like, an older guy that's into you, and you're kind of like, oh, he's so mature, and, like, my parents
he must think I'm so mature. And, I would imagine that could, you know, lead to some rebellion.
According to Jeremy, he said that Bailey complained a lot about her parents arguing about Spider Lake. So when investigators interviewed him, he kind of had this whole different story about what Bailey had been telling him about the state of her parents' relationship. He even said that she would often put her headphones in to avoid listening to them argue. And he also said that Chris really wanted the house. Like I said, it was his dream. And she had told Jeremy that for a couple months this had been happening. They had been having more intense arguments and kind of going back to that night when Bailey was asked about all this, she did say when investigators asked her that she only heard one set of footprints running around the house, not two. It would put more evidence in the fact that like it was not a random break-in situation.
Right.
It was found that the first shot through the wall would have hit Chris if he had been lying in bed next to Jan, based on the trajectory.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The autopsy also revealed that Jan was sitting up when she was shot. In fact, her right hand was raised and actually grazed by the bullet. So if you're sitting up and your hand is like raised in front, you would think that there would have been some indication to her that she might have been harmed. Chris then, after hearing all of this, kind of altered his narrative, saying that, you know, Jan had actually been sitting up before him. And again, the investigators believe with the amount of blood on the scene, he would have had some blood on him, according to this version of events. He did have a small amount of blood on the front of his shirt, which is interesting because according to him, he was lying down and Jan was in front of him. A polygraph revealed deception, although we know those aren't always the most accurate. And after this, Chris offered up a possible suspect named Lisa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hmm.
And what did Lisa do?
Apparently, Lisa was a neighbor who might have held a grudge against Jan. It was something to do with, you know, Jan shutting down a daycare. I don't think she actually, like, shut down a whole daycare, but what she did led to the shutting down of a daycare, something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
And so there was some bad blood there, but it had happened years prior. And when they interviewed Lisa about it, she was like, that's all water under the bridge. That happened ages ago. Like, I'm not concerned about that anymore or like thinking about that every day. And they kind of ruled her out as a suspect very early on. All other suspects were cleared. Chris's brothers were even investigated at one point. Yeah, all other suspects except for Jeremy, who, as we know, was the 19-year-old attempting to date Chris and Jan's daughter, Bailey. Because initially he had told investigators that he did not leave the house, but that was actually not the truth. Bailey had actually texted him about the shots that night. So Jeremy went over to her house to see what had been happening.
That's kind of crazy to me. Like, that also makes me think of, like, teenagers who have this, like, this complex where nothing bad can happen to them. They can't get hurt. Like, invincible. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you going to do if there's gunshots at your, per se, girlfriend's house? What are you going to do, dude?
Well, I mean, not much, because once he saw the emergency vehicles, he just turned back and went home. So, nothing. He didn't do anything. And when investigators were like, okay, well, this is probably something you should have told us before. Like you said, you didn't leave your house and now you actually were at the scene briefly. And he was saying that his dad had told him that, you know, you should probably stay out of everything. Don't get involved. It's not going to look good, you know?
I mean, yes, but if you genuinely have nothing to hide, I don't know. But yeah. Also, don't talk to the cops. Like, I'm deeply mixed on this. Because I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. No, it doesn't. Yeah, it does. No, I could whiffle waffle on this for, like, hours.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's hard because, like, no matter what you say, a police is trained to kind of see the other side. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, either way, you're digging yourself in a hole.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, manipulative tactics used in police questioning that are legal that can sort of trap you in your own statements, even if you know that you've done nothing wrong and you represent yourself as having done nothing wrong. They can trip you up really easily and get your own words putting you somewhere you weren't and just really force a narrative. And that's not to say that that happens in every police department, but it is relatively common. So I get why you would want to keep out of it. Yeah.
Mm. Jeremy's polygraph also showed deception, but he said the deception was actually about the state of her parents' relationship. You know, after this polygraph, he comes out and says that Bailey told him that her parents had been talking about divorce and that the word had been thrown around quite a bit within the last couple of months. Jeremy also said that Bailey had told him she was scared that her dad had been involved in some way in Jan's murder. So it's definitely a he said situation where it's kind of like the two suspects are going back and forth being like, well, you know, this is really sus and he told me this. And then the dad's kind of like, well, he said this. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to kind of know exactly what's accurate.
Yeah, that sort of deflecting blame.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of finger pointing. It's interesting that Bailey was like, no, they had a pretty normal relationship. Like, they only fought occasionally. But then after, she's like, they were talking about getting divorced and I'm afraid he hurt her. Like, that's a very different narrative.
Yeah.
Well, about their relationship.
That's what he said that she told
him. That she said.
But she did go back initially after they were like, you know, after they asked him about their relationship and he told them that they were fighting a lot and she she was having a really hard time with it. Like, she did admit that there had been fights going on about the house in particular.
Okay.
And she did kind of walk back her original claim that they only had minor arguments every now and then.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That makes more sense. I also just want to say that, like, if it ends up being the husband, which, gut feeling, no spoilers, with your daughter in the house, especially considering the rogue bullet that went through the wall, are you stupid? Like, sorry. I'm just...
So ultimately, investigators believed that, deception or not, Jeremy was not guilty of Jan's murder. They thought, you know, his story kind of seemed like a typical 19-year-old where he was like, I'm just going to turn around the car and act like I wasn't even here. I feel like that, I wouldn't say that's like an average response per se, but I can definitely see a sizable group of people doing that.
Yeah, I feel like I would be like, oop, and just like, I would go like full Minnesotan accent and just go, oop, oop, and like turn around.
Yeah.
Like, I could see myself doing that and being like, oh, never mind. Okay, goodbye. But yeah. Like, it's not in a suspicious way. It's just like a, oh, I'm
be involved.
I don't want to get involved in whatever nonsense that is, you know, like, right. And you just stay out of it. I don't think that in and of itself is like suspicious.
They did actually find the murder weapon, and they found it in Chris's own construction company shop.
Ding, 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 husband.
Which was a minute drive away from the house. So if they were truly 9 minutes or several minutes between the murder and when he called, they did the math, and it would have taken him 3 minutes.
Yeah, he could have easily. It. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Accidentally spoiled it.
I mean, no, not really, because in March in March of 2019, a grand jury indicted Jan's husband Chris on first degree murder charges, leading to a lengthy trial in early 2020, and he was found not guilty in February.
Oh, dang.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. Well, because it does sound like they didn't have a ton of physical evidence. It was all circumstantial, you know, like anyone could have dropped the gun at his shop, not knowing it was his shop, technically. Yeah. You know, like,
it's just definitely a lot of coincidences that would have had to fall. I think the vast majority of people on, you know, like Reddit or online forums, or even like the people that were researching this case, really do think that he did it, like, genuinely believe, because there's really no other suspects at this point. Like, it's just him. Right. He was the one in there at the time. There's a bunch of sketchy things that don't really add up with his story. So, yeah, but they just couldn't prove it. And there were some things the defense stated that kind of led people to doubt that it could be Chris.
And that's the legal standard.
Yeah.
Hey, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally any shred of doubt. So the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt in criminal cases. So any shred of evidence that puts any even tiny little hint of doubt, law.
Yeah. And kind of the first thing that the defense attorneys harped on was just memory and it not being great.
Yeah. No, memory is terrible. Eyewitness testimony is so inherently unreliable.
It is, yeah.
That most courts really shy away from it when they can prove
really
in other means.
Yeah. And they kind of said, you know, especially when you're waking up from a deep sleep, according to him, which might not have been the case, but according to his story, that's what was happening. And so in that case, the story could have changed slightly. Then secondly, pictures from the scene showed that when they were doing the trajectory analysis of where the bullet would have landed, the string was not pulled taut, allowing for some room and error in their estimates. So, you know, maybe the shot would not have really ended up hitting him or like needing to have hit him. Mm-hmm. What else? Thirdly, the defense expert stated that the results of the gun were like inconclusive, meaning that they couldn't say it was or was not the gun. And I think I hear that often with defense experts. Like they'll come in and be like, oh, it's just not conclusive. We can't really tell.
Well, that's the thing about expert witnesses is that like you can absolutely pay an expert witness and you can also specifically pick a witness who agrees with what you want them to say.
You can shop around. It's like
you can, and so like the prosecution can have one witness examine the gun and the bullets and say, yes, absolutely, these bullets went through the barrel of this gun. And then the defense can, you know, call their own expert who disagrees. It's like, it happens in tons of different fields. And it's like, what it comes down to is who the jury believes more.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it's such a difficult, like, I would hate to be on a jury and have to like weigh the evidence like that. Like, who do I trust more? You know, like knowing that both sides can pay an expert to basically say what they want them to say. Like, I don't know.
And then lastly, after going back and talking to Bailey again, she kind of stated, oh, I think those shots were probably closer to 2:38, which was a minute before Chris had called 911, which I feel like is really hard to tell. But I also do think that I'd be interested, I couldn't see this anywhere or I couldn't find this anywhere, but I'd be interested to know when her text to her mom came in. And I'm surprised that that wasn't given as evidence, or at least like I guess it's not publicly known, but I feel like that would be pretty solid evidence as to the time frame.
Right.
Yeah. And then the defense kind of also harped on, you know, well, maybe Jeremy killed Jan. He could have had motive to do that as well.
That is also true.
There was a hung jury for a while, and they were thinking it was going to end on that way, but ultimately they did come to the decision that they, you know, he was not guilty, or at least they couldn't prove that he was guilty.
Okay. So not guilty with some circumstantial evidence that was insufficient. And no other viable suspects, except maybe potentially one.
Yeah.
This is a great example of a case where there's simultaneously no information and also like enough information that it seems obvious.
Yeah.
But then the way the court decides, you're like, oh, maybe I've looked at this wrong.
Right. I only found this in one source, so I didn't include it in the main thing, but the prosecutors did argue that he could have been motivated for a life insurance policy, I guess, that would help in buying the resort home. Don't have any evidence if he actually went through with buying the resort after. I feel like that would have been potentially pretty damning, relevant. But yeah. I only saw that in one place. And I just kind of wanted to end this on a couple things about Jan. As I was saying earlier, she was really beloved by the community. This was a really small community, and she had grown up there her whole life, so she pretty much knew everyone there, and everyone knew of Jan. And no person really had anything bad to say about her. During her funeral, the whole town lined up outside of a church, and there were like lines down the street of people waiting to get in to see her, which is impressive considering how small the town was.
Right.
Yeah,
that's like everyone in town.
Yeah.
And then some.
And according to friends, she was just like a light. And I liked this quote. She was the person who brought soup to someone when they were sick.
Oh.
Yeah.
The real MVP.
Mm-hmm. The real MVP.
I think that says a lot about her character.
It says a ton.
So Jan did graduate from Worthington Senior High in 1993. She received an associate's degree at Worthington Community College. She was employed at Ridley Block Operations, and her biggest joy was being with her husband and children. She enjoyed spending her time watching various sporting events for Isaac and Bailey, her two kids. She liked to quilt, travel, garden, and spend time with friends. And her three dogs, Hog, Gator, and Zippy, had a special place in Jan's home.
Zippy is an adorable name for
it. It really is. It really is. That was my case.
So, yeah, so it does sound like a classic, the husband did it. But obviously, like, there's a reason why he wasn't convicted.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when we were just talking about it, literally could have been just that one. It could have been one person, you know? Like, you never really know. And, like, trying to think about it, like, when we were talking about, like, unreasonable doubt, like, even if you have one shred, like, I feel like it's very hard to get rid of that shred.
Right.
Because, like, you are changing somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a delicate decision. It's not, like, a nothing decision. Poor Jan, though. And her kids had to grow up without her.
I know.
So and then sad. It's also, like, I feel like that must be so tough. Like, because I'm sure a lot of people talk, especially if it's a really small town and everyone knows each other. Mm-hmm. It's probably mostly assumed that he was the murderer. So it's right. Like, how do you deal with that as a child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, because regardless of what the jury says, you still have the consensus of the small town to deal with. And that's, at least in my opinion, part of why the show is called Small Town Mysteries, because there is that additional element in, especially in a case like this, where the fact that it took place in a small town really does change the public perception and how, like, he will be treated going forward. He, you know, is found not guilty in a criminal court of law.
Mm-hmm.
No one has to believe that if they don't want to. And in a small town, I feel like gossip moves fast and people are not going to buy that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was interesting because her parents have stood by the fact that they don't believe it's him. They had been married for a couple of decades, so they had known him for a very long time and had obviously built up a relationship with him. But I definitely think other people in town, neighbors, friends, would 100% be at least a little suspicious. Like, I'm thinking of myself, and I couldn't, like, go up to that person and be like, oh, you know, like, a part of me would always be like, did you?
You know? Yeah, I would always be like, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so who lives down by, you know, whatever restaurant or local dive bar. It's the guy who went to trial for killing his wife. Yeah, he was not guilty, but...
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like that will always be attached to who he is, right. At least in the reputation and eyes of the community. And I mean, if he didn't do it, it sucks. But is also just how things go in small towns.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah.
I know, to feel like you, I don't know, to feel like you had, like, a real life, I feel like you'd have to move away from that. You just couldn't. Like, how are you supposed to live? Especially if you didn't do it and you know you didn't do it.
That would be difficult.
Oh, well, rest in peace, Jan.
I know.
Well, thank you for your research. And once again, having a devastating episode. Per usual.
You can't blame her. It was a listener suggestion. I'm just saying.
I was just going to say, but I can't blame you because it was a listener suggestion. So... I blame Ariel.
Now we're just throwing fingers at our listeners. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, listeners catching strays for this now. No, I appreciate the suggestions. If you live in a small town, you live near a small town, you once heard of a small town where something weird happened, DM us at Small Town Mysteries Pod on Instagram. We'd love to hear about it. And we may even feature it in an upcoming episode.
Woo!
Leave us a fun review on Apple Podcasts if you feel so inclined. Clean up some of the not so great reviews that are on there so they're not like the first ones that come up on top. And give us a follow on Instagram. We post when we have new follow us on Instagram. We post when we have new episodes out, and we also post the missing persons that we highlight each week. So if you live in any of those areas that we've previously highlighted and you want to see pictures, that's a good place to find them. And yes, we answer DMs and we love to chat. So if you want to just talk true crime, one of the three of us is always checking our messages. So We'd love to chat with you. All right. See you on the flippity flip.
Come spiral with us next week.
Bye.
Kate was extended.
That was extended. I kept going because I thought you guys were going to keep going.
No, I didn't. I wasn't going for that long. At least on my end, it was like you and Rachel kept going for like 4 seconds after me. And I was like, oh.